Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Human Progress and How to Win. Okay, this is episode 21 of our podcast. Sorry, it's been a little while since my last upload. Just kind of got caught up into some things, just work-related. As you may know, I mentioned I'm in a UX program online, and things are just kind of ramping up. I want to be done here in about 2 months, a little over 2 months. And so it's kind of crunch time. So, you know, little side projects like this, like my podcast, I really like doing this, but it has to take a back burner, back seat, you know, when things take precedent. I want to continue with this and try to get one every week. I want to be consistent with it. Hopefully twice a week would be nice, but we'll see. Things are kind of getting busy. But anyways, without further ado, let's get into it. Episode 21, we are titled, this one is 3D printed bunnies for data storage, mini particle accelerators the size of a human hair, and the wisdom of Alan Kay. All right, so yeah, these are some interesting ones that I found. I really no podcasts in this one, and I may briefly mention Venture Stories one here or there. You know, podcasts are hard to, it's an hour and a half investment on my side to listen to the whole thing and then kind of summarize it for you guys. I mean, that's kind of why. It takes a little bit longer for me to upload, because I've got a lot on my plate, and you know, to listen to an entire hour and a half and really listen so I can like understand and relay it back to you guys, you know, it's a lot. But these ones that I found today are quite a bit short. I mean, they're from the Seeker YouTube channel, so they do a really good job. You know, what's really cool nowadays is like, that's what a lot of people are doing. You know, we're finding research papers, whatever's going out there in labs, and, you know, they do a good job, really good job at just making a 4 minute, typically 4 to 5 minute video, very well done, high production. And, it's very easy to consume. That's why I like this channel. I also, you know, the name Seeker is their channel, and they really, it's kind of along the lines of like what I like to do. I like to really pursue or just research what interesting things are going on in the world. What new projects are people working on that's going to be, you know, a good, maybe a next breakthrough. You know, that's why I have titled my podcast, you know, Human Progress, because I don't know. I don't want my podcast to necessarily be like a tech crunch. You know, I like what they do. I listen to their stuff, you know, or This Week in Startups, which I'm fans of both. I think I pay attention to both. I do, but I don't want to really necessarily always pay attention to like what's going on in the news, like what's going on where you guys could easily find that information elsewhere, like obviously TechCrunch or Crunchbase. Now, sometimes I reference those, but I think, you know, the startups that are getting a lot of attention and funding and whatnot, I think those are easily accessible. And you guys probably have heard, you know, the same news outlets are kind of universal, or I don't know. They're, if you pay attention to tech at all, you'll know that stuff. And I don't always want to be about that. Now, however, I have thought about changing the title of my podcast to The State of Startups. Kind of, I want to keep it basically the same thing. However, I just like that name a little bit better, The State of Startups. It's probably easier to understand, you know, Human Progress, .. and How to Win is kind of definitely a mouthful. And it may not be clear to everybody what I'm about. So I don't know. Let me know what you guys think. You know, shoot me a comment on the podcast page, or just let me know. I may need to see if my contact info is in my podcast. I'm not sure, but yeah, let me, you know, if my email's not there, I will make sure that's there. But anyways, let's keep going. So yeah, the Seeker YouTube channel. So this one, wow, this is really interesting. So a 3D printed bunny could be the future of data storage is the title of it. So basically, there's a lot of research institutions that are using they 3D print these plastic rabbits. Okay. And they basically put, it's an advanced proof of concept for DNA as data storage. So they put like drop DNA samples onto this like plastic bunny, and it stores data, like, and a lot of data. It's like the most data in the smallest area, like, you know, it, like, ever. I think she says like a terabyte, like hundreds of thousands of terabytes of data stored in just like this little plastic. It looks like a plastic toy. It's very interesting. And let's see. I'm going to just read a little bit of description here. Just like ones and zeros are the way computers encode information, DNA base pairs do the same. And the plastic rabbit is not alive. Instructions for how to replicate it are encoded into the rabbit itself. So, I mean, let me just read a little bit more. Yeah, picture hundreds of thousands, 1 terabyte hard drives, and all of the information you could store on them, videos, photos, more. All that information being stored in just a few grams of biological material. DNA offers quite the improvement to existing digital data storage methods like chips, spinning disks, and magnetic tape that you might be used to. Man, the DNA of things, they're going to call it. Yeah, this is crazy. What, you know, more about this information, what could this mean for the future of data storage, as well as how it could be utilized in all kinds of industries like construction, pharmaceuticals, and electronics? So I want to get to that point. I queued it up in the video. Let's take a listen here.
Just little stuff. But teams all over the world are innovating to bring down the cost and complexity of this tech to make it accessible for use in all kinds of industries, like construction, pharmaceuticals, and electronics. It's really just the start of innovation in this exciting field of DNA data storage, because we are producing, consuming, and storing more data than ever before in human history. And as we advance our computing, and as our expanding population gains access to the internet and personal computers, that data volume isn't going down anytime soon. We're going to need better ways to store it and get it to each other. And it looks like co-opting nature's best existing data storage strategy just may be part of the solution. Maybe Mother Nature really does know best. If you haven't...
Yeah, that's fascinating. And that's a really good point. We are consuming and producing, consuming, and storing, yeah, obviously, more data than ever before. I think you guys know that. But we also got to think about what this does now. So think about the environment, climate change. Okay, all this data, you know, takes huge data centers, electricity, which, you know, in turn, how do we get that? Well, the coal plants and oil, all of that, kind of right now, is obviously harmful to the environment. And if we just keep adding more to it with more people coming online, it's going to be chaotic. It's just too much. It's going to be a system overload. So things like this is going to be possibly the next breakthrough. We need to start thinking way bigger, you know, not just how are we going to add more and more and more, but we got to like almost reinvent the systems of what we're doing. Because it's effectively, if I think correctly, I mean, you can imagine, I know a billion, but there's possibly like a 2 billion more people that aren't online in the world. And, you know, companies like OneWeb, Akash Systems, I know, and then the Starlink from Elon, you know, providing satellite internet all over the world. Yes, so we do need that, but, you know, this concept, you know, data storage, though, on the other side of things, how are we going to handle all that? And this could be the thing. So I will try to, I know she said it's, I think, oh, I don't know if that might be the next one. I'm going to, I want to get into who's really behind this, and I'll try to include the links there. I don't know exactly, a lot of times they don't include like the specific labs and the researchers that are working on this, but I'm going to try to dig that up and see if we can like get a concrete company, a concrete startup or whatever that's working on this, because I want to know personally, and I want to see if like any of us, my audience, you guys, would are smart enough, you know, to work in this field to like help them out. Because that's what my that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to relay this stuff to you guys, you know, that may not know about it, and you guys might be working somewhat in this field. You know, you might be data scientists. I don't know. This could be a huge frontier for a data scientist right now. Anyways, I want to move on. I will get these links in the description. So let's go to the next seeker one. This was really fascinating as well. It is titled, "This New Particle Accelerator is Smaller Than a Human Hair." Wow. So yeah, so this is, you all kind of probably know about CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. They accelerate particles to the near speed of light. They collide them, and we, you know, for the purposes of understanding atoms, molecules, and the building blocks of our universe. So this one was, they actually, she actually said it's a research institute from Stanford and like a Slack community. So, you know, that's awesome. Like, probably researchers all over the world that through Slack are helping out. And I'm all about that. I'm all about remote workers or anyone in the world can like help with ideas. You don't have to be a part of Stanford. Like, as much, you know, we want to open source all this so that we innovate faster. Anyways, so they put a particle accelerator so small on a silicon chip to mimic the effects of the Large Hadron Collider. So basically scale down to a like microscopic almost level. So, and really to get at the same thing, but I think they used infrared light to accelerate the particles, and because apparently that works well with the small scale that it's, you know, in. So I'm going to read a little bit about this. I watched the video. I just, you know, we don't have time to go through the video, but and much, much smaller, built on a microchip small. If this functioning prototype of a miniature particle accelerator is any indication, sorry. Okay. Yeah, it's the Slack. Oh, okay. It's not the Slack, like... it stands for Stanford and the Slack, so National Accelerator Laboratory, Stanford Linear Accelerator Center. Okay, so it is, all right. They've produced a functioning prototype of a miniature particle accelerator on a silicon chip. Groundbreaking miniature particle accelerator, a mere 30 micrometers long. So how could it possibly work? The team of researchers who designed the microaccelerator compares the sizing down of particle accelerators to the, okay, yes, to the change the computers have gone through. So, you know, computers once filled an entire room. Now you can have a computer in the palm of your hand, smartphone. I think I have it. Okay, I watched it. I had it queued up. I think it's about...
There's the sizing down of particle accelerators to the changes that computers have gone through since the days when a computer filled a huge room to being able to hold one in the palm of your hand. Further development in this field could make accelerator technology, which is only currently available at precious few facilities, much more accessible to research teams around the world. Imagine pocket particle accelerators helping us probe the fundamentals of our universe. What else do you think a micro accelerator could help?
So I don't know. Could this actually be the next iPhone moment or one of them? You know, I wonder if like these particle accelerators, like if each one of like if a billion people had one of these someday, could like could we each be like contributing to the research? Like if we each, so instead of having a massive, you know, LHC that tries to do it all, could each one of us be contributing just a small part? So I equate this to the SETI Institute, and I've done this before. I don't know. So instead of like having NASA or like a large telescope, like the Hubble telescope, like send out signals to try to find any life or whatever, I know that you can like you can sign up or something at the SETI Institute on your computer, and your computer can send a signal, like the same signal the large telescopes or whatever have. You can do that, and like it's a power in numbers. So if more people sign up for it and use like have the signal running in the background, it can strengthen the effects of the a collective signal. Me and my roommate in college once tried it, and I don't know. Obviously, you know, it took nothing really ever happened. It was fun though; it was kind of cool. But like, I think he had it on his laptop, but he didn't want to do it anymore because it like took a lot of RAM and data, or whatever. So we ended up stopping it. But like, that's a really cool concept. And I wonder if these particle accelerators could one day be like that. You know, if each one of us have it, I wonder if they'll start to say that to us, you know, CERN. And, you know, I got to check out the Fermi Lab someday, because that's right pretty close to my backyard. That's in Chicago. And they, you know, they're like a miniature CERN here in the States. It's in the Chicago region. You know, maybe they're pushing for that. Maybe it's a numbers game. Maybe if they perfect, you know, the mini particle accelerators, and they, you know, push it onto us, like, you know, yeah, you know, get this, you want to have this so that we can all benefit from the collective knowledge that you guys are collecting. Well, and it's also kind of like, you know, AI is making a breakthrough because all of our data feeding into Facebook, Google, YouTube, whatever, that wasn't possible 20 years ago. You know, AI can learn from all of our collective inputs. That's why, you know, AGI is having a breakthrough these days because of our collective use. So that's awesome, because particle accelerators could be that too one day. And I think about that a lot with, like, you know, do we need a new computing revolution, or are we, you know, what's going to be like the next internet? I feel like it's physics. I feel like let's figure out the universe. Let's figure out exactly what dark matter is. What, you know, let's start thinking bigger, you know? I think AGI really is. Like, that's, I think, the last frontier. And I'll probably bring that up because there was a recent Sam Altman video YouTube that I watched that was really good. I think it was only in October, November of 2019. Yeah, him and Alan Kay, man, they're really fascinating to listen to. Actually, let's get into Alan Kay, because I you know, every now and then, you know, I'm, you know, fans of a lot of people, and I'll just randomly, you know, enter their name into YouTube and see if they have a lecture or like a talk that they recently gave. And sure enough, both, you know, Alan Kay doesn't do a lot, but I think the MacArthur Foundation. So I want to bring that up, and I want you guys to see. Well, I want you guys to have the link. It's not that hard to find. I'll provide it for you guys. So Alan Kay, if you guys don't know, you got to research him and watch all of his talks, because he's so good. You know, he's one of the pioneers of the computers, the GUI. He invented the graphical user interface, just, and so fascinating to listen to. So he gave a talk at the MacArthur Foundation So October 16th, 2019, not that long ago. This is all about the circular economy. It's very interesting. And there is, so from this talk, I guess there was a required reading that you were supposed to do beforehand. And someone in the comments provided that link and I downloaded it. I have it as a PDF, so I'm going to share it with you guys. So I don't know, real quick, I just want to give you a kind of an overview of what he talks about mostly. I've listened to a lot of Alan Kay's talks and they're very similar. He kind of uses the same lecture every time, but he's all about powerful ideas and just and new ways of thinking. I think overall it's funny to listen to because he's not very happy with the state of technology these days. He's definitely very proud of himself and he's not afraid to share it. He always talks about the work at Xerox PARC and which is, I mean, it really is amazing what they did. And I think I get the point I get the feeling that there's just not enough people thinking like Xerox PARC and what they were able to accomplish. And I agree. I think there's just a lot of startups and apps that are just looking to make a lot of money, investors that are looking to make a lot of money. And there's just not a lot of groundbreaking technological breakthroughs. And it's funny because some of my top people all are saying the same thing. Him, Sam Altman, saying that, he's all about trying to fund fusion energy and like big, big projects. And we're just not seeing it. Peter Thiel talks about that. So, I have the article pulled up here and I'm going to just kind of go through it. He quotes Albert Einstein here, saying insanity is doing the same kinds of things over and over and expecting different results. Another one is we cannot solve our problems with the same kinds of thinking we used when we used to create them. So the circular economy, climate, food, water, health, shelter, rights, education, ecology, pollution, energy. It seems like it's all intertwined. And, He's just all about a higher level thinking. Like, how are we going to think about the world as a whole or systems, as opposed to, individual parts. And you just have to go through it. It's really interesting. We're kind of running up on time. I know he says a lot about taking an idea and scaling it 30 years out. Does it make sense 30 years out and trying to scale it back into how can we start this today then? Does it make sense today? What is it in 5 years, 10 years, But I love that. Take an idea and immediately 30 years out to evaluate. We need to get back to ridiculous ideas. It would be ridiculous if the idea weren't possible 30 years out. So yeah, just really interesting. It's like 18 pages long. A lot of it is he talks a lot about the history and what they did at Xerox PARC. You can kind of gloss over that. It's interesting, but we want to make sure things are applicable now and into the future here. So I might just mention a couple more things. Anyone can build a doghouse from almost anything, but almost no one person can build it 100 times larger. So that's how scaling works. We need, more people. All right, I want to see if I can include this in the show note, in the description. So, all right, I'm going to stop it there, and you guys can read more on your own. Sorry, a little bit choppy today. I know I'm I got to prepare a little bit more for these and just kind of get my thoughts together, but I'm kind of in a hurry today. So, all right, guys, stay hungry, stay after it. Stay focused. Use leverage to your advantage, you know, judgment, you know, and your decision making is important. It's not always about how hard you work. It's, you know, thinking very hard about what's going to work, who's doing what, is it going to succeed? You know, really think hard about thinking, honestly. You know, practicing a skill to get a job is necessary, yes, and that's what I'm doing. But obviously, the whole point is to have it pay off and to pay off big, you know. So I'm trying to show you guys how to do that, you know, by showing you what to pay attention to. Because it's leveraging, there's so much information nowadays, so much content. You got to filter through the noise and really find the key nuggets, the key things to jump on, and then you'll succeed. You get that equity, you get that investment, it blows up, and you just keep on riding that wave, you know. All right, guys, I will see you in the next episode. Take care.